You're storing memories to lose them again. You'll forget everything when this whole thing ends. You can't even predict what tomorrow brings. But don't lose track of living in the present.
Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everyone. I'm Anthony Veneri.
And I'm John Deck. And each week, we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
And this week, now that, my friend, is a shared moment. That's right, we are watching Chasing Amy from 1997, directed by Kevin Smith. John, you haven't seen this movie, have you?
Well, let me tell you what I know about this movie. There's the shared moment that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to guess that's a callback to a conversation that happened earlier in the movie.
Sure is.
So they talk about it. Oh, well, I don't know what that is. Blah, blah, blah. Something. And then later, something mastical, and by that I mean magical and mystical, happens. And there's a heartfelt moment and like that happens. And this movie has Ben Affleck in it, I think.
Yep, it does.
And probably an actress that portrays someone named Amy.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Joey Lauren Adams, yes.
And is Kevin Smith Bob in this?
He is, yes. Jay and Silent Bob are in this. Actually, correcting myself, Joey Lauren Adams' character is not called Amy. That will be revealed during the movie. Yeah.
We don't get into it, but the bottom line is you're absolutely correct. This is actually a movie that somehow slipped past me, and it seems as though it's a movie you quite enjoy. So you're educating me this week.
Well, it's a movie that I quite enjoyed in the past. I haven't watched it in a long, 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 long time. But much like with our Hudson Hawk episode way back when, this is a movie that I have seen that John hasn't. John, which Kevin Smith movies have you seen?
Did he make Star Wars?
He did not make Star Wars, no.
RoboCop.
Nope.
Dogma.
Yes.
All right. Let's stick with that answer.
Okay. Really? Dogma's the only one you've seen? You haven't seen Clerks or Mallrats?
I've seen all those, yeah.
Okay. So this is Kevin Smith's third entry into the what he calls the View Askew universe. After his production company View Askew, it was probably just to give you, John, a quick synopsis before we actually go watch it. This is about a young man.
I don't want to know anything.
Oh, you don't?
No, I want to go in totally fresh. At this moment, my only impressions are is that it could possibly be some variation on a romantic comedy or something. That's all I know.
More or less it is, yeah. I will say that this movie was probably one of my first brushes with the sort of idea of the representation of gays and lesbians in media, like in film. Like, not to say that it wasn't there before for me, but this is probably the most in-your-face that it was up to that point. It's been said that it's sort of a good representation or sometimes that it's like some things don't hold up. But anyway, it's a movie that I remember really enjoying mostly because I had a crush on Joey Lauren Adams all those years ago. But I'm curious to see if I still enjoy it as much as I used to.
So you're like, I think what you said is that you haven't seen this in a really long time. Is that right?
Yeah, it's probably been at least 15 years since I've seen this.
Oh, man, I've seen it more recently than that.
Well, no, I mean, you haven't.
I guess like, I've never have.
You will have seen it more recently than that in time, that you're going to watch thing. It. Time is a flat circle and is the only way to escape this existence. I don't know.
I'm still catching up with that.
Yeah, me too. And I'm the one who said it. So why don't we pause here and go watch this movie? What do you say to that, John?
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Excellent. We are going to go do that. It's on Netflix right now. So if you want to stream it there, go ahead. If you don't have Netflix, You'll need to either get it from your personal library, or you can rent it on one of the various streaming rental services that are out there. And when we come back, we are talking about Chasing Amy. Ready, John?
Oh, boy. Yes.
Let's do it. Yo, look at this morose motherfucker right here. Smells like someone shitting his cereal. Bong. We're back. We just got done watching Chasing Amy. In case you guys missed it up top, this is John's first time watching this movie. I've seen it a number of times, but this is John's first go at it. With that in mind, John, what are your first impressions, thoughts about Chasing Amy?
Well, I was thinking, you know, of that exact answer and how I dive into what I think of the movie. And then I just really felt like, you know, from my perspective, I kind of want to give you the floor first. I want to hear, you know, after revisiting, after having not watched it for a while, what you felt, what you're thinking. I'm a rapt audience. I want to hear.
Okay. So the good news is that I don't feel the same way that I did about Rounders. I recognize the shortcomings of this movie, you know, 23 years on or whatever it is, but still not a bad movie. It definitely plays to its indie roots and indie strengths. It leans a lot on its talent rather than a super strong script, although not that Kevin Smith is a slouch as a writer, but it has all the sort of general feel that you would expect from a mid to late 90s indie flick. But on the whole, I would say that for me, it still pretty much holds up. I maybe don't have the same passion or strong feeling toward the movie that I did when I was younger, but I still had a good time watching it. You know, it was fine. It was a fun little. It was a fun way to spend 90 minutes.
See, I can't quite fault that reaction. I was hoping you would come at it from an angle of being like, "Oh God, I can't believe this is really like the work of art, like the best film I've ever seen." It reemerged from a cocoon, and now I'm a new person because everything about this was gold. And then I'd be like, "You're insane," and we'd fight. And I thought that'd be fun. But as that didn't happen, I'll just say that my first thought in preparing for this is I kind of feel that I might have a very different opinion of this movie if I had seen it 23 years ago or, you know, sometime in the past, where maybe there were things about it that were just so different or weird or fresh, or that, you know, my mind maybe would have been expanded, or I might have, you know, dug it a bit more and really connected with it. But as it was, on the whole, I kind of just hated it.
Really?
Yeah, like, and it's not necessarily because of its, is it politically correct, or what are some hot-button sexuality, gender identity issues? It's not like that so much, although there are some issues here and there that we could get into and all that, but that's not what really made it hard for me. It was the two main parts. There's this character played by Ben Affleck called Holden. That's one problem, was him, everything about him. And then the other,
even his shitty name, like, yeah, come on,
like, I mean. And then secondly, the script, which again is a bit of a surprise, just because Kevin Smith is, you know, not Shakespeare necessarily, but he has a certain quick-witted back and forth, you know, indie vibe that in other movies I could dig a lot more and realize, you know, I don't think any of his movies are perfect, but like there's just something to them that, you know, I feel like there have been some comparisons at different points in time with, like, you know, Tarantino, and I feel Tarantino went a different direction and grew in a different way. But for this one here, like, it was painful the number of times, mainly Holden and Alyssa had, and mostly Holden, but also Alyssa had a few of these things, but he would have this like block of just a grand soliloquy to deliver where he would talk and then he would talk and talk and he'd be telling her, explaining exactly what he's thinking in his head and why, all the reasons why he knows how she's going to react, but then all the reasons why she should also not react the way she's going to react, because he's already thought of that and thinks she should react the way he wants her to react. And then she pauses, and then when she pauses, he continues and says it again and rephrases it and says it again. And then she pauses and is about to say something, and then he's like, oh, but then also this. And like, it kept going on and on. And like, that happened at least 3 or 4 times where it was just like, ugh. This is not just not good dialogue. It's not a dialogue because there's not more than one person talking. It's one.
No, it's a monologue. Yeah,
and it's combining that with the quality of his character and his whole whiny, stupid, but I want it. I just want things my way. And so it's like, if I had seen this when I was also, you know, like a young, you know, early 20s or whatever, I can't do math right now, but like if I had seen this in a different era in my life and different thoughts, maybe I'd connect more. Maybe I would have really thought it was great and I would have liked it. And then watching it again now, I might be like, yeah, it's not perfect, but I still have good feelings. It was pretty good, but I just can't do it. I can't even pretend. This might be the most unpleasant experience of all the movies we'd watched, because I mean, and don't get me wrong, there were some decent parts.
That can't be true. That absolutely cannot be true. I like
Airheads more.
Okay, let's go back. I want to rewind to April of last year when we watched Stripes.
Stripes is a way better movie than this. I think...
You say that now. You didn't seem to think that then. You shit all over Stripes.
I had never seen Chasing Amy back then.
That's fair.
But I think I was really hard on Stripes because I had seen it and I did like it. And I was kind of shocked to reemerge and watch it and, you know, find out that I just didn't like it like I thought I was going to. Here I had no expectations and I was cautiously optimistic that it'd be some cute little indie movie that I'd walk away going, you know what? That was pretty good. And I just can't do that.
Well, you used a really good word earlier in your diatribe, which was soliloquy. I think that that's a really good word to use here because you get a lot of that in this movie from a number of different characters, some more well done than others. But nonetheless, like, but that's what we got. That was sort of my chief complaint, not to bring it back up. But when we watched Rounders, like, that was my biggest thing, is like they would have these long blocks of word salad to spit out of their faces, Matt Damon, and like it would just it would fall flat because it's not how people talk. It's not how human beings interact with one another. Nobody has these conversations in this way where you know so eloquently describe whatever the fuck it is you're trying to say, and then, by the way, follow it up with a dick joke.
I hear what you're saying, but here, and like, to even layer on top of that with Rounders, I 100% agree. But even on this, I believe that there's someone like Holden making stupid speeches like this, and it makes me even angrier that that's a real thing and that it's being glorified in this movie. Like, it's not so unrealistic that some idiot's going to rattle off on the mouth and be unrealistic and self-centered. Of course that's going to happen. But, like, I don't want to watch it. I don't want to cheer on this main character when this is his life and this is what he's doing and he gets to be the big hero. Like, it just really annoyed me. Like,
that's that transitional phase, though, I think, between like the grunge era and the emo era, if you want to bring in music into it. Like, this is just sort of the natural transition between those two eras, and I think that Holden is a byproduct of that, in that he's just this sort of depressed artist who's like trying to find something to make him happy. But he also comes from this repressed background that doesn't really allow him to, you know, relate to somebody like Allison, and it just like it's well written, like that part of it is well written, but it's just like it's not a really great execution of it.
I've been
and also in this, by the way, Holden is like a pasty chud. This is not Ben Affleck's finest moment in the looks department. I just have to say.
That's fine. I mean, looks don't even enter into it in my mind for any of the top 100 reasons that this wasn't enjoyable. But that's fine. Whatever.
I couldn't stop staring at Ben Affleck's teeth. That was part of my problem.
Here's my problem. I was debating not bringing this up, but I feel like I have to now. I feel like to justify my violent opposition to the content of this movie, I just want to read just a real quick short quote from this movie if I can. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
All right. And this happens when they're in the car and they pull over and, you know, he tells Alyssa, you know, tells her, "I love you." And then she like looks at him and she's like, "You love me?" And then this real quick short thing that he says, that's written really well and kind of concise, that I think is going to be a good indicator of his character and the way he treats her, is to say, "I love you," and not in a friendly way, although I think we're great friends, and not in a misplaced affection puppy dog way, although I'm sure that's what you call it. And it's not because you're unattainable. I love you very simply, very truly. You're the epitome of every attribute and quality I ever looked for in another person. Pause. I know you think of me as just a friend, and crossing that line is the furthest thing from an option you'd ever consider. But I can't do this any longer. I can't stand next to you without wanting to hold you. At this point, I was crying because I felt so bad for him. I can't look into your eyes without feeling that longing you only read about in trashy romance novels. I can't talk to you without wanting to express my love for everything you are. Pause. Waiting. She looks like she's going to talk, and then he starts talking again. I know this will probably queer our friendship. No pun intended. Right.
That was like, fucking
no pun
cringy.
Intended. Sure. No, I didn't get that at all, asshole. But I had to say it because I've never felt this way before. Like, I had to say it. And I like who I am because of it. And if bringing it to light means we can't hang out anymore, then that hurts me. Pause. But I couldn't allow another day to go by without getting it out there, regardless of the outcome. He says again for the third time, which by the look on your face is to be the inevitable shoot down. And I'll accept that. But I know some part of you is hesitating for a moment. And if there is a moment of hesitation, that means you feel something too. She's about to talk. Pause. Dramatic. And then he goes, all I ask is that you not suppress that at least for 10 minutes and try to dwell in it before you dismiss it. It's really deep. There isn't another soul on this fucking planet who's ever made me the person I am with you when I am when I'm with you, and I would risk this friendship for that chance to take it to the next plateau. Pause. Because it's there between you and me. You can't deny that. And even if we never speak again after tonight, again for the fifth time bringing this up, please know I'm forever changed because of you and what you've meant to me, which, while I do appreciate it, I'd never need a painting of birds bought at a diner to remind me of. Wry grin with a little bit of a wink and like, look how cool and charming I am. And that's just the beginning. That's just one thing. Okay, I'll pause now for applause and everything.
Well done. Holden McNeil's a piece. Hashtag Holden McNeil is a piece of shit.
But it just wraps up my feelings and perception of a character who is just so unlikable and unrelatable, and just kind of made me hurt a little on the inside to witness existing.
See, I think that the original script would have probably sat better in your head there. And let me just, hold on, I'm just gonna pull it up real quick because, so. There's a different script.
There was a lot of typing to get to IMDb.
to this movie called Chasing Amy, only instead of being friends, Holden McNeil is a serial stalker, and he's chasing Amy, whose name is actually Amy, and stalking her, and he has that exact same delivery of lines, only she's tied to a chair because he finally caught her. It's a very scary, very dark film that Kevin Smith decided, oh, you know, maybe I'll just I'll turn this into a romantic comedy instead. That'll probably go over better. But yeah, so that's the alternate script that I didn't just make up and that is 100% real.
Yeah, I think I actually read that too. And wait, hold on. thanks for sending me that link that I clicked on with just one click there to pull it up. And you're right. This does look like the kind of thing that should be delivered by a serial killer. I agree. And like some horrible, creepy person that has some tied up in stalking. This could be kind of fun to see a misplaced, horrible, lengthy speech from someone who's just twisted in the head and that should just be put down. Like, I agree. I think that this script is better and I think we can move on because now I feel at peace.
Ben Affleck is chasing Amy. Hooper X, his tirade at the very beginning when they're at the Manhattan Comic Con is one of the best parts of this movie. But even you have to admit that that was a fun moment where he's giving his, you know, his militant Black Panther-esque speech in front of this audience and you know, pulls out the gun and, you know, pretends to shoot Jason Lee. And like that whole thing was fun.
You said I have to admit that?
You do have to admit that, 100%.
It's definitely not my least favorite part of the movie.
Well, that's as shining an endorsement of that scene as I guess we can hope to get from John Deck.
There are moments in this movie that are kind of funny, that are kind of charming. Some of the people in this movie carry certain lines or actions or looks in a way that I like. I'm almost embarrassed to admit that I like chuckled or found entertaining. Like, it's fine. Like that happens and there are good things. This is not the worst movie I've ever seen. It just so happens there are so many moments like that thing I read earlier that really made me just feel all like rah. But there are funny moments. There are even, you know, borderline clever moments. There are little things going on that, and this is now watching it for the first time in 2020. So a lot of these things, I just imagine, you know, like if you go back to the 90s and you have a character like Jay, you know, like he wasn't a tired archetype back then, you know?
Like, no, not at all.
And now he kind of is. Like, he's not edgy or, you know, talking about, you know, cursing in a diner. It's not a big deal. You know, like there's so many things that, like, now he's just a character to me. He's not, like, edgy and interesting or anything like that. But, like, his and Silent Bob's, you know, arrival into that scene, that just kind of made me smile. And, like, it was, you know, enjoyable little thing. And Kevin Smith saving, you know, maybe one of the better versions of those long speeches for him to tell a story, which is when it's appropriate, is, you right. know, not when you're in the middle of a so-called dialogue with someone in a very important moment. But no, like, that stuff was good. Like, I enjoyed some of that. And then Jason Lee, who I just love as an actor to begin with, like, he has a few moments, a few reactions, a few looks that just made me laugh because of the way he responded or delivered a line or looked around a bar as he realized that this is a place where lesbians hang out.
That bit, it went on for so long. And I was like, man, this might go on for too long. And then I really like just watched his face and I was like, yeah, this is some really good physical acting that he's doing right now.
Yeah, like, it wasn't something I wanted to give out an award for, but it just, like, I was entertained. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be the tone of the movie. Like, was this, you know, like, kind of, like, off-color, maybe mildly offensive take on a bunch of idiot guys who can't comprehend, you know, women that want to be with each other. Like, I wasn't thinking that'd be great, but I thought, okay, I get it. That's what's going to happen. Then, you know, it became super quick right away what the whole point of the movie was going to be. And so it's just like, there was nothing really shocking or surprising, and that's fine. But then again, even though I've never seen this movie, I've lived in pop culture for 23 years. So I've probably heard references. I've probably heard mentions here and there enough that, you know, I don't think I just have a brilliant mind who figured out the entire plot of the movie. But yeah, so like, but there were moments, there were things that were entertaining or good or, yeah, so
there's sort of a lot to really kind of dig into there, but I think ultimately this movie, for as much as I still enjoy it and for as good as it probably still is in many people's eyes, it's not timely. Like, we talk about, like, one of the premises that we first launched this podcast under was, does this still hold up today? This probably doesn't in a lot of respects, like, particularly with how, you know, straight people interact with the LGBT community and how,
right,
how, you know, gay culture is viewed through the lens of a straight person, and like how gender fluidity even works, like there or sexuality, the fluidity of sexuality, like it's not timely in those respects, because we were in 1997, we were very naive to a lot of those things, and even Kevin Smith, whose brother is gay, was probably still very naive to a lot of those things. If you remade this movie today, shot for shot and word for word dialogue, I don't think it would do well. I think that if you made this movie as a 2020 film, it would not do well. I think if you look at it as a 1997 film, you sort of give it that, okay, this was okay for 1997.
You know, it's funny I mean? You should mention that, because, hold on. Sorry.
This Foley work is so fucking good, man. Doing great.
I'm very apologetic about all the unnecessary stealthy typing I just had to do. I should have prepared this ahead of time, but I had to bring this spec script up in front of me that was some initial thoughts for apparently a Chasing Amy sequel.
Oh.
And I thought, you know, I wonder if this has an idea or premise or something that would kind of, in modern days, improve upon or save or somehow change the story in a way that we would like it. And it's just interesting. Let me just kind of summarize here. I don't want to read the whole thing word for word. It's a bit lengthy. But essentially, the thing that you'll recognize here is that Chasing Amy 2, which was subtitled Chasing Amy Again, it got picked up by what turned out to be a kind of, you know, impressive franchise, which really is kind of shocking, because when you read through Chasing Amy 2, it seems like at first they're going to get into the dynamics of what it's like to interact with family when it comes to, you know, if you come out of the closet or you're having issues where, you know, you have parents that are very restrictive and conservative and, you know, you just want to be yourself. Like, that's what you think. Okay, I see. So this is going to be the heart of what's going on. But they just keep, you know, enforcing over on and on and on that it's, you know, it's about family and it's about family. And then they start driving cars really fast all over the place. And you're like, why is Chasing Amy have a bunch of these people who are like, you know, like driving cars and racing. And then it gets more and more ridiculous. And then at the end, this guy that was supposed to be Ben Affleck, I guess, he comes out and he shaves his head and he's got like on a white tank top and he's like, guess what? I'm holding now, and family's very important and it's everything. And also I'm very fast and very furious. And you're like, what? And then it turns out he's got a lot of other ideas about driving cars fast and furious for like 22 other movies in the future. So they changed the name because they're like, Chasing Amy, that's going to get tired after about 6 movies. So they just restarted it all up. So the first Fast and Furious movie is more like a sequel to Chasing Amy.
Well, I had no idea that those two tied together. I must have missed that. Was that from like a deleted scene?
Well, hold on. oh wait, it says here that the writing's really small. I'm not stalling for time. Like, I just have a hard time reading this. Let me put on my reading glasses. Yep, it turns out this was all based on a deleted scene. And that Oh, and it says here also that Jason Lee went on to be an Almost Famous. Of course, we knew that, and that he's and that he's generally kind of awesome. Yeah, it says all those things here. I don't know why that was a note on this script, but hey, you know, sometimes these things don't make sense. Hollywood, what are you going to do?
Yeah, those Hollywood types. I had a couple of other things more about the overarching kind of view askewniverse. There were some nice little tie-ins to the earlier movies.
Yeah.
You know, they talked about Caitlin Bree, or I guess Allison was friends with both Caitlin Bree and Julie Dwyer, Caitlin Bree being Dante's girlfriend who, you know, had sex with the dead guy in the bathroom of the Quick Stop in Clerks. And Julie Dwyer, who we never actually see, but the young lady who was doing laps in the YMCA pool and had a brain aneurysm and died.
Yeah.
Allison was friends with both of them, and that was sort of the greater tie-in to Chasing Amy. The other thing I wanted to bring up, sort of talking about the indie roots of this movie, this is sort of the last real indie Kevin Smith movie that we get, like without like the big names, and before Kevin Smith sort of had the friends that he had who were like, yeah, you know, I want to be in your movies, I think you're really talented. So, you know, you had Clerks, you had Mallrats, and then you had Chasing Amy, and then I think Dogma, while not this big budget big Hollywood blockbuster or anything like that, still had a lot of bigger names in it than you would have previously seen in any Kevin Smith movies. You had
Chasing Amy,
Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, but you had also you know, Chris Rock and George Carlin and Janine Garofalo's in it at one point.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that that was a step up into Hollywood Kevin Smith and what he could do when he had a bit more, you know, when you make a movie for like $3 and then it makes, you know, $20 million, like you all of a sudden it opens doors and you get to, you know, try you know, to feel yourself out a bit more. And
Alan Rickman, I almost forgot, sorry.
But like Chasing Amy does have 3 Oscar winners in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah,
even though two of them only say like a couple of words, but
fair. But like, one was made on a budget of $10 million and the other was made on $250,000. So like,
yeah,
this, for better or worse, is the last of his real indie movies. Like everything after this, yeah, some of it is smaller flicks, but ultimately is not this, you know, a massive hit like you, like we've sort of come to expect from Kevin Smith.
Yeah, yeah, it's funny because like I've probably listened more to Kevin Smith YouTube videos and podcast related things, you know, in recent years than anything else. And so like when I hear his name, I'm thinking about someone who is a devout comic book nerd, someone who has a lot of opinions on, you know, movies, and but like someone who also just has like a really well-rounded take on like everything. Like I really enjoy the way he dissects entertainment, and like so it's like regardless of the movies that he made, my most recent feelings about him are all very contemporary and very much rooted just in how he views different things, and thinking, you know what, how come they never got him to direct one of these, you know, $400 billion superhero movies? Like, I think that would have been kind of interesting. Or even if not that, maybe one of the more independent takes on things like Amazon, you know, doing The Boys, like that felt like could have been a good fit for Kevin Smith to be a part of more actively.
Well, he's done some stuff like that. Like he, a long time ago, early 2000s, I know he was attached to a Superman movie that ultimately never took off.
Yeah.
Starring Nick Cage. But, I mean, he's directed episodes of Supergirl and The Flash.
Yeah.
He's done, obviously, all of his Jay and Silent Bob stuff. But he's very prominent in sort of the comic book community. He obviously, he's got his shops in New Jersey and L.A. He's got that show on AMC. Where it's
Walking
like,
Dead.
Yep, that
based,
one.
Based on a comic book.
Exactly.
Or
where it's like Pawn Stars for comic books, only I think it's called Comic Book Men.
Oh, yeah, that one too.
Yeah. But, like, he's... He whether he's actually making comic book stuff or he's just talking about comic books or he's just making his movies, like everything has tie-ins to comic books in some way. This had literally the main characters were comic book writers. The Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is about their comic book characters becoming movie superheroes. Like he keeps himself relevant in nerd culture, but he does it in the right way, and he does it through an air of appreciation and love for that craft, and his approach to his dissection, like if you ever listen to Fat Man Beyond, which Fernando, friend of the show, Fernando Picago, turned me on to, everything that he brings up is always like sort of how I like to approach the movies we watch, which is like, oh, I'm watching this through fresh eyes, or I'm giving it the appreciation that probably the director would want me to give it, because like that's the intent. And like I don't know that he influenced that, but his approach and my approach are very similar, whether it's intended or not.
Well, I just want to hear his thoughts on the whole Fast and Furious franchise now that I know the real origin story.
Well, I'm sure he's probably given some interview somewhere about that. And Kevin, if you'd love to come on the show, we would love to have you to talk about your Chasing Amy sequel that turned into the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah, Kevin, if you've gotten this far in the podcast, and I don't just mean this one, I mean the other 40 whatever before this,
right, exactly. I'm not gonna put words in anybody's mouth, but I'm sure he's listened to every episode.
He probably listens
every Monday when it drops. It's probably on his regular rotation every Monday.
I imagine it's probably likely that this all started because there was like some insider information that leaked and he found out we were going to do an episode about Chasing Amy. And then, like, it got delayed because we had the Roscoes. And then, like, somewhere in that period of time, he's like, well, I better go back. And what's this? Oh, Jaws? I love Jaws. I can't wait to hear these guys tell me how much they love Jaws. And he went back and listened to the first episode. And he's like, well, I mean, Anthony kind of seems like he's got a decent head on his shoulders. And I kind of agree with him. And we think in a similar way. And what the fuck is wrong with this John guy? He is horrible. And I hate him. I got to listen more, though. I'm really drawn in. And so, you know, 50 hours later, he's listening now again. We've already established that he did not get turned off by my ranting. In fact, he was intrigued by it, I'm sure, to put words in his mouth even further. And so I think that, you know, that he would definitely want to hear that, you know, if it makes a difference, I don't think the movie is that bad. Let's have a conversation, Kevin.
That sounds like a plan to me.
Okay, no, wait, hold on. He probably, once he heard that, he probably stopped listening because he's now looking for a way to contact us, which is funny because it's thememorydistillery@gmail.com. Anyway,
that's super easy.
Yeah, super easy. But so he's off looking to contact us now, so I can say that whole part was a lie. I didn't like this movie. I just think it would be really cool to talk to Kevin Smith.
I do as well. Speaking of Kevin Smith and his movies, let's start closing out the show. I have a final question to ask. What is?
But wait,
your favorite?
A final. I had a funny thing to say.
Oh, well, say your funny thing.
No, well, because I know you had a bit of a, you know, a little crush on Joey Lauren Adams. Wait, is that her name?
Yes.
Joey okay, Lauren that's Adams, right. Yes. First of all, is she related to Amy Adams? Do you know?
I don't believe so.
I mean, Adams is one of those names that only two people probably have in the world. But that's not the funny part.
Right.
The funny part was a joke I made, and I just have to, like, quote myself because I thought it was pretty funny. And I don't mind bragging about myself and how hilarious I am. But it was just in the very beginning when she was singing her song.
Mm-hmm.
when she got brought up on stage and singing. And I was like, I was really into it. And I was just like, how this sounds like someone singing who has had 6 years of tap dance lessons. So, yeah, I don't think that that performance was incredibly inspired in the way that it was probably meant to be. But to probably be fair, they did drag her up and kind of joke about how she wasn't good. So, you know.
She did live up to the description given by the singer up there, for sure.
Yeah, so.
My first encounter, I think, with Joey Lauren Adams in film was Dazed and Confused. And that was sort of where I think I got a crush, a little teenage crush on her.
Mm.
Anyhow.
Yeah, let's wind it down. Let's relax. Let's put a shrimp on the barbie.
Yeah, let's do that. So, my question to you, John Deck, what is your favorite Kevin Smith movie?
I don't even have to stall for time or pretend on that one. It's definitely Dogma. And in watching this now, I also had this thought of, you know, like, not necessarily saying we should do this now or soon or next or turn this into Kevin Smith February or anything crazy like that. But I do want to go back, because I haven't watched it forever. And I want to see, do I still think this is a good movie? Do I now hate this movie? And, you know, because that whole thing of maybe I would have liked Chasing Amy if I would have watched it 23 years ago. Well, Dogma is, what, 20 years ago, 21 years ago? And like
21, yeah.
So it's like, but now am I going to watch this and just cringe and feel uncomfortable and just kind of hate it the whole time? I mean, I feel that I might even appreciate it more. And so, yeah, I'm kind of curious. I know that it had a lot of fans and a lot of people who hated it and like some controversy, but I don't care about any of that. That still, I'd say, remains the most interesting and appealing of the movies of Kevin Smith's collection. Yep.
Well, now I have to pick a different one.
Was that going to be your pick?
It was always going to be my pick. Dogma is by far my favorite Kevin Smith movie to date. It just has so many great elements to it, and I agree, we definitely should work that into the episode order soon. I agree. I don't think that we need to make this a view askew-nuary, but we can definitely do it soon-ish. I guess if I'm not going with Dogma, I'm going with Clerks. It's the original Kevin Smith movie, and it's something that I've watched relatively recently within the last 3, 4, 5 years and still pretty thoroughly enjoyed. So yeah, I'll say either Clerks for the indie stuff or Zach and Miri Make a Porno for the newer stuff.
Yeah, I've never seen that one either, so I feel a bit of a hole in some of my Kevin Smith filmology.
That one's a lot of fun. It's not one of those that it's like a Jay and Silent Bob movie, so like you don't have that element to it. Like Jason Mewes is in it, but you don't have the whole like Snoochie Boochies or whatever. So yeah, so that's that, and that is Chasing Amy. Everybody, thanks so much for listening this week, and every week we deliver new episodes fresh to your door or your iPhone or your Android device or your computer.
Yep, your choice.
Every Monday on various podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts and Stitcher and Spotify and Anchor.fm and Podbean and all those other wonderful podcast platforms. John?
Yeah, I think I was just getting this track ready to play. Hold on, I got it. All queued up, because the music in our podcast does come from the song Destroying the Evidence by Semaphore. I want you guys to check it out, but as a special treat, the part where I normally would tell you about following, you know, where you can write us in Gmail and all that stuff, I do have a recording of Joey Lauren Adams singing that part. So let me just hit play on that. Real quick here. oh, here it is. I found the play button. Also, you can email us with questions, comments.
Are you Joey Lauren Adams' ghost?
Just to say I at the memory distillery at gmail.com. And also tweet us at TMDpod. And that's where we're at on Instagram. Yeah, that wasn't great, but I just felt like I had it, the audio file, I might as well hit play. So that's great. And I guess if you've listened this far, I suppose you've earned the right to hear me thank you once again, because what a feat of listenership that you've managed to get here. Thanks again.
I've already stopped listening.
Yeah, I've tuned out about 20 minutes ago. but it's very important you realize once again, my name is John Dash.
And never forget that my name is Anthony Veneri, and this has been the Memory Distillery. Stay classy.
Stay sandy, every Scooby.
What? Goodbye.
You got to the end a little too quick, and I wanted to throw in a little snoochy booches, and then I said sandy instead, and then I lost the whole train of words.
Oh boy, snoochy booches.